I've always been a huge fan of Whistler and really have enjoyed sharing my experiences.
Have I said too much?
Pretty soon you'll be telling stories that can't be told. It's just mind-boggling.
Welcome to my podcast, Whistler Stories That Need to Be Told. Today, I have Nigel Woods joining me, chairman and director of Coastal Mountain Excavations, which he started over 40 years ago. Another interesting thing I've always wondered is about your acquisition of the island.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Because in case people don't know, there's only one island in all of Whistler, and Nigel owns it. And he made it possible to live there by building a road and a bridge on there and servicing the damn thing. How did you do that?
Well,
it must be a huge story there.
It is a really interesting story. And a lot of it is nice to set the record straight because a lot of people thought
I stole it
or squatted on it and didn't have any, you know.
Yeah.
But during my really early time in Whistler, the time that I decided my life was changed, I'm not going to be a lawyer. And that was probably 75, 76. Always had a fondness for, I guess, the West Side Road, Alt Lake Road. I think it was because it was more rural in nature. And I grew up on a farm, was used to space around me. Mm-hmm. And one day going up the old red chair way back in the day,
I looked down.
And went, wow, wouldn't that be a cool place to live? And the little island, mm-hmm. you know, the lake, I looked mm-hmm. at it and thought, wow, that would be really neat. And, you know, it was just a dream.
I did the same thing with Bird's House when I lived at Bunbury's. Mm-hmm. I looked down on Alpha Lake and I saw that little red roof cabin up the road,
yeah.
an old gravel road. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to live there? And eventually I built a house above it. And it came true.
Yeah. So I was going up the chairlift and I thought, wouldn't that be cool? So, when Whistler became a municipality, you could actually go somewhere and look at the registry of properties. So I looked up that island, it was his own
legal description.
Legal description.
Yeah.
It was District Lock 5667. Never forget it.
Yeah.
And it was owned by a lady from Victoria by the name of Grace Naismith. And I thought, well,
convenient.
So I thought, you know, why don't I give her a call and see? I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
I had two pairs of skis and a pickup truck. That was basically about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's before my business had really started.
You're a good salesman. Yeah.
And so I was trying, I'm a good salesman. So I thought, well, you know, got to find out if she'd like to sell it. So I wrote her a letter and I didn't get a reply back from her. I got a reply back from Montreal Trust. You know, no, she's not really interested in selling it. And she's quite ill. And so I went, too bad. But I never give up and stuff. I never give up on things if I think they're important. So I wrote back to the trust company and said, well, like, do you think it'd be possible for me to meet with her? And I had enough intuition even then to kind of sense that it was an emotional piece of property.
Of course.
Because there was nothing on it. You know, I thought, well, it must have some meaning to her. She died during this process.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you had met her?
I was trying to meet her.
Oh, okay.
And she died.
Oh, okay.
And I went, oh, no, what do I do? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
another
setback. So I called my dad, who was a lawyer in Victoria, and he said, well, why don't you get a hold of the estate and make an offer to purchase it?
Yeah.
So, that's what I did. So I got a hold of the estate, the executor of the estate, and made an offer to buy the island for the same price as what lots were trading for at the time.
Nice.
Which was, $25K. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you
had no competition. Like, nobody knew you were buying the island.
No one knew we were buying the island. No one knew anything.
So you did
about
steal it.
No one knew anything about it, right?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, so I made an offer, long story short, went through a period of time with probate and stuff of the will. I remember seeing a guy rowing a boat around the island and I'm going, oh no, some rich guy is just going to buy this place, right? The money I offered was every cent I could afford. Mm-hmm. I couldn't afford, you know, it was another $24,000.
I know, yeah.
I was out. You know, yeah, I had that much to go. I just made my best offer, and that was it. I couldn't do anymore. But he was actually the gardener and the executor of the estate.
Oh, my gosh.
Wonderful guy.
Yeah.
And he was just, because the family didn't know anything about the property, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just an island in the middle of the woods.
Woods, but there's nothing there. Right?
Woods Island.
Woods Island. So that's how I ended up buying it. And wow. I bought it from the estate.
In what year?
1977.
Wow.
And then spent the rest of, not steadily, but getting approvals to get access through the Crown
land. Slow process.
And yeah. A slow process, yeah. Figuring out, wouldn't have been able to have a septic tank there, right?
Guess but not,
then,
yeah.
Then when I knew the sewer line was going to go through. Mm-hmm. So I knew that. So therefore I knew
it
I
was
could.
Pretty close, and yeah. You had an excavator.
Yeah.
But you had to get across the bridge. So yeah, you had to build the bridge.
You know, there's all these. Yeah. There's one. It was one roadblock after another, but, yeah, you know, yeah. I gradually kind of didn't knock them down, but I bent them down and was able to succeed in getting that done. Mm. So that's how I ended up owning it. Pretty, I was only the second owner. The Crown sold the land to Grace Naismith in 1945 for $50.
Wow. Was that about the same time the Clarins bought their property?
No, it was way before that.
Before that, even. Because the Pemberton Trail came right through
exactly.
There.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Myrtle Phillip was a very good friend of Grace Naismith. And if you look at some of the archives in the museum, the name Naismith will come up.
Mm.
They were actually original. They weren't really settlers. He was a doctor.
In Victoria?
No, from Vancouver.
Okay.
And huh. They used to come up on the train when the train was pushed in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe what he did is he actually had some little clinics at the Rainbow Lodge. And, yeah. And I think that was
for the people, the handful of people
handful
that lived
of
on the
people
lake.
That were here.
Yeah.
And so they must have seen the little island yeah. going by in the train.
Yeah.
And it became their property. We've been, you know, we've had our, you know, I got married, built the house, and our kids were raised there. And it's been an absolutely wonderful place to live.
You're probably not going to move.
I'll be buried there. There's no doubt about
Is
it.
Is that right, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then, how about, you've been involved in a few projects, too, around town. And I think one of the most successful ones was the Scandinav Spa and the campground. You created a nice, unique place to camp and bring your trailer. It's not like a subdivision. It's got some character.
You
had a little putting green and, you know, that was your vision, right?
Yeah, it was my vision.
Yeah, yeah.
Without a doubt, Doug O'Mara and I owned the property together.
Mm-hmm.
And when we owned it together, the municipality put out a proposal call. We had the option to buy the land, which is the balance of the lands that were on the Nicholas North property. That was part of it. We came up with some concepts for a campground that were different than most. We won the proposal call, and then the property was rezoned. Doug was busy with Whistler Heli-Ski.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any appetite to be a campground operator. So I bought out his shares and we built the place.
Mm-hmm.
And my vision was really what it is today. And the reason that the spa is there today is that the cost to get across the river.
To build the bridge.
It was back then, it was well over $1 million to build the bridge. And you needed some significant cash.
You needed an anchor over
an
there.
An anchor over yeah. on the other side mm-hmm. to make it work. No one would lend you any money.
So
for
did
it.
They come to you?
No. Through a friend of mine, Donnie McQuaid, who you know, he knew one of the guys who was involved in the Scandinav Spa in Mount Tremblant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they were kind of interested in looking around at Whistler. So I went, okay. So we went, myself and we had 50% partners, a company called International Land, which had done a lot of business here in Whistler. So myself and one of the guys from International Land went to Mount Tremblant and saw their facility and what they'd done there. the nature, the natural
unique.
Setting.
It was a very unique spot.
Had water, had everything.
Yeah.
And I went, this will work all day long.
Yeah.
So what we ended up doing, pretty good business deal with the Scandinav guys. And they built it. They weren't business partners, but they were, call it, the anchor tenant that allowed us to develop the rest of the property.
Okay, right? And that's how it happened.
And that's what you have there today.
When was that? What year was that been?
It was
after around the Olympics?
Yeah, before the Olympics.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
before. They ran a first-class operation.
Yeah.
And so I was totally convinced and happy to have them do their thing.
Wonderful. Right. Yeah, wonderful. That's a wonderful addition to the community. And, you know, and another thing that always blew my mind, you know, the Nestors thing.
Well, it was one of those things out of necessity.
Yeah.
We had our shop and office down in Function, right?
Yeah.
On a pretty small piece of property.
Yeah.
Couldn't buy any industrial land that was suitable. So myself and Steve Bailey bought that property. And my motivation really for buying the property wasn't so much with a development hat on. It was for a place for Coastal Mountain to go.
Yeah, put
the,
your
the construction company.
Yeah.
And we certainly wouldn't have been able to go through the exponential growth that the company has gone through.
Without that, yes.
Without the new facility,
yeah.
A proper shop, an office where you could bring people in and talk to them, place for staff.
Yeah, good,
you know,
shop.
You name it,
yeah,
right?
Modernized.
Was the perfect piece of land.
Yeah.
The flat. And right in the middle of town.
And then you did stuff like the underpass and the, you know, the Valley Trail going through there, which are all unique things to the community.
Yeah, right? I mean, that underpass was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Everyone else thought it should be a bridge.
Yeah.
I went, no, because it's going to be problematic to build it. Extremely expensive.
Yeah.
A lot of maintenance. I struggled to get the approval of the underpass, and the planning people eventually understood that it was the best option.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it today. It was by far the best option.
Yeah.
You don't see it. It's really cool.
And you go under and you're whipping along and it's not a big deal.
If you want to see it was a hell of a construction project too. Because
you had to go under the tracks.
Under the tracks.
Yeah.
We built that whole thing in 20 hours.
Huh?
Yeah.
20 hours?
20 hours.
So the trains had to stop for 20 hours?
20 hours.
Yeah.
It was done.
Wow.
And
was there blasting?
No, it was all it's all underwater. It's all sealed with a big...
Yeah.
It's just wrapped in it's waterproofed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's under the water table.
Oh, okay.
So anyone listening to this, on YouTube, I think it's Tunnel at Whistler.
Oh, yeah.
They filmed the whole thing from start to finish on time-lapse
and speed
photography.
It up. Wow. Yeah.
It's really quite a video.
Huh.
It was like a battle plan. We had redundant equipment. Each one of the sections of the tunnel weighed something like 50 tons, you know, you know, we did it in 20 hours.
Wow. Wow.
It was just a hell of a job.
Yeah.
We got it done. And today, there it is. Right?
There it is. Yeah. No, it's a unique thing in Whistler. It's a good part of our Valley Trail.
Very
good. But I mean, it was known from the very beginning that that was the obvious place. And again, you're stubborn, you know, stick with it.
The powers to be didn't.
Yeah. It was politically weird.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was a terrible thing to go through, Bruce. But, you know, they did realize that it made sense, right?
Eventually.
Here was a piece of crap land that was just, it was polluted. It had Zeppo's junk that he collected, all the wrecked cars. I don't know how much junk we hauled off of that property, but it's staggering.
It's
now
cleaned up pretty nice.
Yeah, you know, now it's got our operation. Whistler Connections is there.
Yeah,
we built
nice building.
A nice building.
Yeah.
They could not operate out of anywhere better in the valley. And they're an essential. It was an agonizing process to go through, just like Riverside.
Yeah.
But in both those things were an unqualified success.
So what do you think our future's like? Do you think we're going to grow, or what are we going to do?
We've got to have certainly enough growth to accommodate the people who run this town. The people that want to be here, have passion to be here, and make their life so they can make a decent living.
A community.
And I think we still have that community, Bruce, but guys like you and I are getting old. And a lot of the next generation that has...
They're frustrated.
Because they can't either... But it's not unlike other places, really.
No, it's not. But you know, as a resort and in a valley and, you know, our transportation, our housing, you know, is the mountain going to keep going? You know, how many people? Remember when it was like 40,000 beds was all we could handle, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, there's no limit now. It's like the sewer plant was their limit or something.
That's right.
And so technology, right?
Technology will take care of that. And I think having a larger center that we have now, I mean, you can talk to some people, they don't like the size that Whistler is right now. I've enjoyed every stage of my career here, every piece of it. I like the wild days when I was younger.
But you like to go out to dinner and have a wonderful meal.
I love the convenience of being able to walk from my house to,
restaurants.
You can hop on your bike and go somewhere. I'd have a really, really hard time living in anywhere else. I'd be as happy as I am here now, right? And have been most of my adult life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that we've got it's a unique, wonderful place.
Yeah, and people don't realize where it came from, you know, and how different it was when we came here, and it was logging slashes and power lines and dirt roads.
Everything was gray.
And no, I didn't see the top of the mountain for months. And, you know, it was a different world, and now it's like paradise.
Yeah.
And we've got these lovely lakes and these trails, and I can see where it's overwhelming for new people to come and go, how do I fit in this paradise, you know?
Yeah.
But I think there's a big opportunity with the Beattie Group and the old tennis facility there. And that's going to be the crowning glory, hopefully. Yeah. I mean, it's surprising what has happened with creativity in this town. It really is.
I mean, the innovators and the sort of free-spirited, free mind, we've been part of it.
No. It's successful.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So, I'm not going anywhere.
You know, I don't think so. I hope people still believe in this place and you make room for those people to stay in this town, right? I mean, it's a wonderful thing. This place has always been...
It's our best asset.
It's been a small town, but a big town, right?
Well, we're big fish in a little town.
That's right. But, you know, it still has that small town feel.
And you know what?
Even today.
I mean, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to live in this kind of town? I mean, it's pretty special. So, thank you for listening today. Join us on my next episode and hear more Whistler stories that need to be told. Please share and let me know what you think of my podcast.